The final case for oral argument this morning is the Independent Trust Company Appellant versus South Dakota State Banking Commission Appellee. For the appellant is Mr. Charles Thompson, an attorney from Pierre, and for the intervener Appellee, Security National Bank, is Mr. Roberto Lang from Sioux Falls. Justice Zinner has disqualified himself, and the court has appointed the Honorable Stuart Tiede, a circuit judge from the Second Judicial Circuit, Sioux Falls, to sit in his place. Mr. Thompson, you may proceed, sir. You have 20 minutes.
It pleases the court, counsel. I represent a group of certified public accountants, the firm King, Wrench, and Prossler, and one lawyer who want to put together a trust company called Independent Trust Company, and we're the appellant. The lawyer is Chris Holman, who happens to be in the room with us. It is an O-line CPA firm, I think, although this is not in the record, I think they've probably been there for about 90 years. They want to do business as a trust company pursuant to 51A6A5. To paraphrase that particular statute, there's four legs in it, and we have to show that the organizers are qualified and good people, that the officers are qualified and good people, that there is a need, and that there are prospects for success. I discussed those probably ad nauseum in the brief, pages 6 to 19. The sequence of events that led up to this is that the folks at the Independent Trust Company put together the information requested by the South Dakota Division of Banking. That's Exhibit 7, which is the application. And that was pursuant to a set of instructions, which are presumably rules, at least they're published on the internet, where you find what you need to do. The division director at that time was Mr. Duncan, and Exhibit 1, which the court will have seen, he approved, at least from his point of view, all four of those legs. He then noticed it, as he was required to do, and there was only one objection, which happened to be the largest trust bank in southeastern South Dakota, Sioux City, Iowa area. The division, after the initial submission, did not request any more information or indicate in any way that the application was deficient. At the hearing, Independent Trust Company put on 27 witnesses. Seven of them were by affidavit, that's Exhibit 5. 20 of them were by affidavit. Seven of them were live witnesses. We put on an expert study and research report by Dr. Madden, and the application and all of the information required. As we view it, there are two questions for the court to decide. Number one, obviously, did we meet our burden? Number two, do we have a right to rely on what the Division of Banking told us we needed to produce? Again, the statute, the four legs, qualifications of the organizers, 16 of the affidavits went to that, five of the live witnesses, the application, and Mr. Duncan's report.
Would you concede that there is some discretion with the commission? This merely isn't a checklist where if you get all the checks, you automatically get your license.
That's true.
There is discretion among the members. That's why you've got a commission, isn't it?
That is exactly true, Your Honor.
All right.
No, do not argue with that.
Did Mr. Duncan, did he indicate his reason for waiving the filing of the financial statements of the officers and investors?
He did not, that I am aware of. It is not in the record, but Catherine Brantner, who was the interim director at the hearing, I think also indicated, yes, it was waived. I do not know his reasons other than presumably he didn't think it was necessary at that point.
In the financial statements, their absence became an issue at the hearing. Could you have asked to supplement the record or for leave to file them at a later date or to come back at a later date, and was that done?
Your Honor, at the hearing, at least three different pages, and I'd refer you to the transcript, page 19, page 75, and page 210, we offered to do exactly that, not only with financial statements, but also with regard to capital. So those are things that we did. And our people said several times at the hearing, if there's anything you want, just let us know and we'll provide it. It never came up until the findings of fact and conclusions of law that that was even a question. And then the findings and conclusions, of course, basically sandbagged us. The Banking Commission obviously can require more capital. Now, we agreed initially in our outline to put up $360,000. $200,000 is required. Under 51A6A19, the Commission can require at any time more capital. There has never been a request for more capital. We have offered. If anybody would tell us they need more, it would be in. Again, I don't see how that we can be faulted, as we were in findings, conclusions, and order, for the amount of capital when it was never requested that it be greater. In addition, for setting up a trust company, the adequacy of capital is not even an issue. It is in a bank, but the differences in the statutes are 51A6A5, which is the trust company, 51A39.6, which is the bank, and capital is not an issue. With regard to the second leg, the quality of the officers, 18 affidavits went to that, 5 of the live witnesses, the application, Mr. Duncan's report, and Chris Holman's resume, which is Exhibit 2. At that point, there was a question by the members of the commission on the ethics of a certified public accounting firm referring clients to its trust company. Well, this court has answered that in Dorsey, at least as far as a law firm referring clients to a law firm's trust company. And this court has essentially said, yes, there are ethical challenges, but you've got to meet them. And you've got to do it right. Interestingly enough, at the hearing, it also came up that Security Bank of Iowa, which is a totally separate entity from Security Bank of South Dakota, at least on paper, had referred trust clients over to get Security Bank of South Dakota going. They have the same Sarbanes-Oxley challenges that anyone else has. And again, this court has, I believe, answered that you got to do it right, and they obviously did. Certified public accountants and one lawyer making up independent trust company are aware of the ethical challenges. Dorsey does not prohibit it. And again, it just says you have to do it right. We have enormous support. As far as the need issue was supported by 20 of the affidavits, all 7 of the live witnesses, plus, at least in my view, cross-examination of some of the others. Exhibits 6, 1, and 7, same things we've talked about, overwhelming support. The only testimony that there was at the hearing that there might not be need came from 3 witnesses with a vested interest. One of them was the trust officer of Security Bank, but even he indicated that he really didn't think independent trust company would be much competition for him. One witness was a trust officer from Sioux Falls who had objected to the Dorsey application a couple of years ago. And the third one worked for a trust department and had made a few phone calls. Those 3 witnesses who testified for the intervenors, in my opinion, all have their fingers in the trust pie in that part of southeast South Dakota and are not necessarily independent witnesses. Some of ours weren't either, but some were. The fourth leg is the prospects for success. Again, 20 affidavits, 7 witnesses, Dr. Madden's research, great support, but the testimony was from various lawyers in South Dakota, Iowa, and Nebraska, as I recall in the affidavits, that they would refer business to it. The KRP CPA firm obviously will refer business to it. There are affidavits and testimony that other private accountants and CPAs would like to have a totally independent trust company and refer to it. 6 banks, according to the testimony at page 59 of the transcript, will refer business, and obviously an investment firm would. The plan, which is Exhibit 7, is a reasonable outline. It does not contemplate everything that will happen in the next 100 years. Any business plan has to change as things come up. One of the items that was contested were the fees. It was pointed out that in the pro forma, the fees of Independent Trust Company were higher than those of Wells Fargo or Security Bank. And it may be higher, and maybe they should be higher for a quality hands-on trust company than for the Walmart of trust companies in either Sioux Falls or Sioux City. But service sells fees. I'm not a golfer, but I am an observer of the human condition, and I see people golf. And people will go down here to the municipal course and pier, and they'll golf 18 holes and enjoy the wind in central South Dakota and hit balls. And they'll pay $15, $20, whatever the green fees are. People will also pay 10 times that up at Sutton Bay. I don't understand that because I'm not a golfer, but it's a fact that people do not necessarily object to paying a higher fee for what, to an outsider at least, looks essentially to be the same service. The fees are an estimate at this point. I think the real world would dictate what they should be.
Now, Mr. Thompson, in order to reverse this, we'd actually have to find that these findings of fact were clearly erroneous, which is a fairly high burden for your clients. How would we do that? I mean, they're there, they listened to all the evidence, they made the findings. And I'm sure that the other side is going to say there are just as many, there's as much evidence to support as there, the other side as yours. But if there's any substantial evidence to support their findings, we have to approve them. So kind of lead me through how we would address that. What would we have to find, or what would we have to actually say to reverse their clearly, to find that they're clearly erroneous?
I think you would go through the four legs of the statute and look and see if there was substantial evidence to support it, and if there on the other side was substantial evidence to refute it. And I would submit that a complete reading of the transcript, which I know you've all done, will lead you to, at least I hope, lead you to the conclusion that it was clearly erroneous, that there's no question that the evidence was overwhelming. I think you can, it is a hard burden, I acknowledge that. But at some point, there has to be a line over which the commission steps, or any agency steps, when they rule on these things. They can't ignore all of the evidence, and essentially, our position is that they have ignored all of the evidence. The mere fact that Security Bank exists doesn't mean that the commission can keep out Independent Trust Company. And that's set forth in Wall versus Finner, which is cited on page 2 of our brief. Any more than the mere fact that you can get pizza at Walmart here in Pierre should prohibit a La Minestra or even a Pizza Hut here in Pierre. Essentially, Your Honor, we are asking that the court review all of the testimony, and I believe at the end of the day that you will find that it should be reversed, and that's what we're asking. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Thompson. Okay. Mr. Lang, you have 20 minutes, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice. May it please the court, counsel, this court should affirm Judge Gore's ruling upholding the Banking Commission. In this case, there is no dispute as to what the governing law is. The Banking Commission set forth in its conclusions of law, 1 through 5, what the law is based on the statute, SDCL 61A, 6A5, and the Dorsey and Whitney Trust case. ITC raises no issue with the summary of the law that the Banking Commission set forth, so the de novo standard does not apply here. In the Dorsey and Whitney case, which looked at Banking Commission findings in the setting of approving a new trust company. This court made clear that the clear error, the clearly erroneous standard applies not only to the Banking Commission's finding of facts, but also to the process where the Banking Commission takes those findings of facts and applies them to the statutory criteria. So this court cannot reverse unless it is definitely and firmly convinced that an error has been made. On this record, there is no way to find that an error has definitely and firmly been made. The Banking Commission findings of facts are well supported in the record. On pages 5 through 26 of Appley's brief, Security National Bank set forth separately the findings of fact of the Banking Commission and then set forth in a section directly below each finding of fact where in the court record or the Banking Commission record support for those findings of fact can be found. There's not a single finding of fact of the Banking Commission that is unsupported by the record. Rather, the record bears out what the Banking Commission found.
Did the Banking Commission request any additional information at the time or subsequent to the hearing?
Your Honor, not after the hearing took place. The record doesn't indicate what happened before the hearing took place, and obviously the Banking Commission does seek out a completed application, which is Exhibit 7. The Banking Commission also sought out information certainly during the hearing. The transcript is replete with questions from the commissioners who participated in the hearing that show that not only their expertise, but how engaged they were during the hearing and what questions they had concerning this application that was filed. So in a sense, Justice Meyer-Henry, the Banking Commission was seeking information during the hearing. It isn't, I believe, under the statute or the rules, the obligation of the Banking Commission after the hearing to continue to seek out information. Rather, the statute endorsing Whitney Trust made clear that it's the obligation of the applicant, ITC, to meet the statutory criteria and to bear its burden of proof by a preponderance of the evidence on those statutory criteria. Part of the application, which is Exhibit 7, requires an applicant to set forth their projections of income and expense, which is important to the Banking Commission engaging the business experience, the prospects for success, and some of the other statutory criteria. ITC's financial projections were terribly flawed. On the income side, ITC proposed to charge more than the going rate in the market for trust services. They're proposing to charge 1.2% on the first $1 million under their care when the going rate, the testimony revealed, was about 0.9%.
Well, Mr. Thompson says they were going to provide the Cadillac of services versus maybe other companies that don't provide those. Is there a market out there for that?
I don't believe so, nor was it clear during the hearing that they were going to provide the Cadillac of services. Indeed, I think it might have been closer to a Yugo. The Banking Commission found out during the hearing that ITC intended to outsource almost all of the traditional functions of trust services, including investment services, security services. They were going to run a rather lean shop of one trust officer and a support staff, and then adding a second trust officer with one support staff member. It was clear during the hearing, and I believe it would be clear from reading the transcript as well, that this wasn't going to be the Cadillac of all trust companies. On the income side, ITC assumed that it could collect fees of about $4,500 per trust account under its supervision. The Banking Commission heard evidence that on average in this market, per trust revenue is about $2,400. The Banking Commission also heard ITC's income projections that it would grow its business by a leap of doubling it in the between the first and second year, going from $25 million under management to $50 million under management to $75 million under management in the 3 years for which projections are sought. ITC had no explanation of how it could start up, charge more than the going rate, provide fewer services in-house than trust companies do in the area, and yet grow their market or grow their business so aggressively. On the expense side, the projections were even more flawed. There are three illustrations of this, although there's more to be found if you review the record. First, ITC disregarded entirely in projecting expenses any employee benefits or the employer's share of Social Security.
I have another question on the fees. Is this the type of an industry where the consumers ordinarily shop around, or is this like a hospital where you just go to the hospital and you get the shock when you get the bill?
This is not like a hospital. The testimony during the proceeding from Mr. Twidwell, Mr. Corcoran, and I believe Mr. Murphy as well, is that this is a very cost-conscious client-based and industry. Indeed, there are quite a few options in the area. It isn't as if you're in Sioux Falls and you have either Sioux Valley or Vera McKinnon to choose from. In the area in which ITC proposed to do business, the testimony was there were 31 companies offering trust services, and brokerage firms and insurance firms indeed are getting into the area as well.
I have a question, too, that I don't want to get you off necessarily, but I want to come back to Mr. Thompson indicated in his argument, and I'd like your explanation for this, that they had applied and the Commissioner of Banking had approved, had looked at all four of these criteria and had indicated to the applicants that this would be approved. Isn't this almost kind of like an ambush? Then they come to the hearing thinking that this is something that they've met all the requirements, and now all of a sudden the commission says, no, you haven't, and says basically they haven't met any of them. Isn't there a problem with that?
Justice Meyer-Henry, I don't believe it to be an ambush at all. Let me start by answering it this way. The statute makes clear that it is for the Banking Commission to determine whether the criteria 51A, 6A5 is met. And that is also in the Dorsey and Whitney Trust case. So ITC knew going in that it was the Commission's decision, not the director's decision.
But we all know that when you deal with the bureaucrat in charge or the person in charge and they give you the high sign, that you feel pretty secure that you probably have provided all the information that you need to.
Well,
I mean, aren't we sending a message here of some sort that they're approved on the one hand and then when they get in front of the commission, it's a whole different story?
No, I think not. That would be elevating the director above the commission where the statute doesn't do that. Moreover, I think that's taking more from Exhibit 1, the recommendation of the banking director, than is actually there. It is a recommendation. It isn't a stamp of approval. He can't give that, in fact. ITC knew that it would have problems or faced a contested hearing. Security National Bank had already intervened. They realized that they had to meet the statutory criteria of the statute before the commission. So no, this is not an ambush setting. I believe they're taking more from the director's report than is appropriate. Moreover, the director makes the report based on an application, and as the findings found of the Banking Commission, the director's review was cursory. It occurred before the hearing took place, before evidence was put on at all. The director's report does not give them a guarantee of approval and does not, by any means, merit this court reversing the findings.
How much information did the director have as opposed to the commission? I know they took testimony and all of that, but how much did he actually have in front of him when was it he, I'm hoping, that when he made the decision, or made the recommendation, I should say?
Justice Meyer-Henry, it's not clear from the record,
okay.
But My understanding would be he would have the application, which is Exhibit 7. I believe that everything beyond Exhibit 7 that is in the record would maybe not post-date his recommendation, but would post-date his review. That is my understanding. That is unclear from the record. I should make.
I guess still my concern is that the banking commissioner looks at all of these applications, just like the banking commissioner does. And what made this one different that when it got to a hearing, it was not approved? I mean, he obviously knows what's going on with the banking commission and which ones get approved and which ones don't. He approves it preliminarily or recommends it, and then the commission really disregards all of his recommendations. What's different about this one than all the ones he's probably seen before that he was comparing it to?
I think what is different about this one is, a multitude of things. The income projections being unsupportable and the expense projections being a bit ridiculous. And that probably did not come to light until the actual hearing. For example, the neglect of the employer's contribution to Social Security and the employee benefits not being calculated in the income or expense projections, I don't think came to light or probably was realized by the director until the hearing. The fact that ITC planned on outsourcing all functions and the expenses that go with that didn't come to light until the hearing. At the hearing on that subject, Smith Barney's representative testified that they would be the ones providing the investment advice and investment services and would charge 50 basis points or 0.5% of assets for that service. That was completely neglected in the expense projections, and that is an enormous oversight. That figure alone in year one would be $125,000 of additional expense to ITC, which would throw it into a deficit in year one of an excess of $200,000. I believe it's $232,000 in year one as an operating loss. In year two, that number grows because the projected amount under management grew, and it would again create a deficit, a net loss to ITC in excess of $200,000. In year three, the final year of the projections, the Smith-Barney fee again would produce a net loss to ITC using their numbers, all the rest of the numbers, in excess of $200,000.
So they're going to have to put more capital in or it goes broke under your argument.
That is exactly right. There are no prospects for reasonable success here. With the business, the way they planned on doing business, losing $200,000 per year each of the 3 years. And this is not a pizza business. This is not a golf business. This is a trust company where people put their money in the hands of a fiduciary and expect that money to be secure. It's a business where the legislature has seen fit to give the banking commission the responsibility to regulate and to gauge whether a trust company should be allowed or not. Those are just two illustrations of the problems on the revenue side. And indeed, if you added the benefits and the Social Security share, you would have net losses per year approaching, exceeding 300,000 in some instances. ITC also in its application indicated ignorance of the South Dakota minimum tax on trust companies by leaving as a zero the amount of taxes that they anticipated other than income tax. What this reveals is an application from people that did not plan through, did not apparently have the business experience to properly run a trust company. During the hearing, it became clear there was only one person affiliated with this proposed ITC with any trust experience. And that person had no management experience in the trust area. ITC had not thought about a security program at all, which is an essential part of a trust department. Now, ITC's arguments from the affidavits, I think, should be discounted. These affidavits contained misstatements in paragraphs 6 and 7, many of the affidavits did, that there was only one option in the area for trust services, which is just not true. The application itself has an attachment that shows that there are, I believe, 11 brokerage firms in South Dakota in the region, 11 trust companies in South Dakota in the region, and 24 trust companies across the border in the Sioux City area. The statistical study that the plaintiff or ITC presented included in the Dakota Dunes trade area all of Lincoln County, all of Turner County, which is now recognized as part of the Sioux Falls metropolitan area. The statistical study does not establish a need. There were three witnesses, as ITC's counsel mentioned, that testified that there was not a need for a trust company such as this. And one of those, Mr. Murphy, was not affiliated at the time with a trust company. He was an independent expert. He had worked in trust companies for two previous banks and had a history in excess of 20 years in the area. This court, in Dorsey and Whitney Trust, recognized that the legislature has purposefully given the South Dakota Banking Commission, quote, a great deal of discretion in deciding factual questions because the commissioners are individuals with specialized knowledge of the banking and trust industries whose judgment and insight in these specialized fields facilitate the admittance and overall regulation of these industries, end quote. So the Banking Commission has large discretion, is entitled to discretion under findings of fact and conclusions of law. In Dorsey and Whitney Trust, this court also recognized that the overriding purpose of these banking and trust laws is the protection and security of depositors and creditors. ITC had the burden of proof to establish each of the four elements, each of the four subparts of the statute. They did not satisfy that burden of proof, and this court should affirm the Banking Commission findings.
Thank you, Mr. Lang. Mr. Thompson, you have 10 minutes, sir.
Mr. Lang said that this court needs to be firmly and or definitely and firmly convinced that an error was made. I submit to you that it was. They never asked for one additional document. We volunteered time and time again. The witnesses volunteered and said, you know, this is not to be an ambush. Tell us what you want. If we need more, we'll supply it. Not one thing was ever asked for. Not a single thing. Capital, the issue of capital, according to Mr. Lang's scenario, will go broke before dark. They never asked for one additional penny. There is a specific statute that we referred to in the brief and I referred to earlier that gives the commission the power to ask for that. Mr. Lang said that the fees were more than the going rate. It probably is more for than the going rate for a huge firm with volume. The Walmart example again. But most trust offices do start small, and the fees he quoted are on average. Average simply means there are some smaller and there are some quite a bit higher. He was shocked that we would project that we could double our income or our assets in the first year, couple of years. That's the only time any business can double is in the first year a startup. You can't double it after you've been in business for 50 years because you get too much volume. The projections, Exhibit 7, are simply an outline. As this court knows from the trust companies which have come before this court as Supreme Court cases, there are various kinds. Some of them are the Wells Fargos of the world, and some of them are representing one particular family. There is no evidence as to what those fees are in the record, but you can rest assured that some of them are considerably higher. The argument with regard to what we could rely on or not rely on with the director of the division. If the division director tells us something is waived, shouldn't we be able to rely on that, especially when during the hearing and before the hearing and after the hearing, we asked repeatedly if they wanted more information, if they wanted more money, if they wanted more anything, and the answer was total silence.
But doesn't that get to the one of the critical problems that apparently the commission had, and that was there was no plan. And your plan seems to be, if I'm listening to your argument, was that we would come to the commission and say, you tell us what you want. In other words, you were asking the commission to provide the plan that the commission apparently felt you should have come to the commission with. I recall in your opening argument, you talked about a plan, but wasn't that one of their concerns? There was no plan. No. Even with respect to the projections on income, I believe your witness testified, if I recall the record correctly, that only the really estimates, and he couldn't give an explanation as to where those numbers came from.
Yes, there was a plan. That's Exhibit 7. Whether I would fill it out differently, whether this court members, whether Mr. Lang would fill it out differently, it's at that point, it's a best guess. They put together a best guess, knowing that things are going to change daily as they get started. The applications and the information on the regarding the instructions for filling out that particular form says the application will not be accepted for processing by this division if the data is incomplete. That's what it says. I think we should be able to rely on that.
Then is it the best guess when they leave out expenses, say, for the employees for Social Security expense or the employee benefits?
Probably not a best guess, Your Honor, but obviously, just as in the Dorsey case, this is going to be supported by the firm. The Dorsey Trust Company is being supported by the Dorsey Law Firm. This trust company is going to be supported, obviously, by a firm of reputable certified accountants who have been in business for 90 years.
Okay. Then how about would your answer be the same then as to the failure to include the expense for outsourcing the investments?
Your Honor, most trust companies, well, let me back up. There are two ways of doing it. One is you can have the all-encompassing Walmarts of the world where you buy pizza and you buy shotgun shells and you buy clothing. Or you can have a store that simply sells pizza, to use a dumb example. But many small trust companies, charge fees for their trustee services, for custodial services, for whatever they do. The investment end of it, in many situations, is a totally separate bill that they never see. As an example, if a client wants to use this trust company, they can come, ask, and say, will you be the custodian, will you do the management, will you do the hands-on, take care of my child who has problems, that type of thing. But I want Joe Blow from Smith Barney to manage the assets. That's fine. You split the fees, and in that ITC would never see that fee. It would simply be a fee that's paid to an advisor that the donor, if you will, grantor, would request because they trust them.
So you think you're saying it's unfair then to say that the outsourcing expense should not come back off of the income projections that they've made?
Right.
So the consumer has to pay both?
Yes. I mean, that's the way of the world, Your Honor. Also, in the Banking Commission records, and I don't know if it got into this record or not, but after the hearing was completed, after Director Duncan had resigned, Interim Director Brantner on July 9th wrote us a letter and said the division has reviewed it, we got a hearing, the only thing that we need is some more information on need. That letter is in the file. Now, whether it's in the record or not, I don't know, and if it's not, obviously you have to ignore it. But I think it's there. I know it's there. We've got a copy of it.
So are you arguing that, you know, and it's not a situation where you make a motion for a new trial, but that's basically what you're arguing for, isn't it? Is a new shot at a fair hearing where they will tell you what else they want before they make their findings of fact and conclusions of law?
Your Honor, if they represent to us that things are as they are, don't say anything to us about it, such as the financial statements, until the findings of fact and it's all done, and then beat us up for it, I think that is inherently unfair. I don't see how we can possibly answer the unasked questions. The questions were not asked. The financials were waived. With regard to the capital, if you want us to put more in, the statute says the Banking Commission can absolutely require additional capital. They haven't. They didn't. They simply wrote out the findings and so on that you've seen.
If the Commission felt that the applicant had not done the homework, had not adequately prepared, is there anything that prohibits or prevents you now from resubmitting an application and taking another shot at it and getting the ducks in a row, so to speak, if that's what the Commission was concerned about?
That's what we're asking you for, Your Honor.
I understand.
But if you don't get it from us, is there a time period when you can ask, you can reapply?
No, I think you can set up and apply for a new trust company every day.
Okay.
But where you've been beat up so badly in a way that my people at least feel is so totally unfair and so clearly erroneous, you kind of lose your enthusiasm. That's kind of where we are.
So what you're suggesting then is we should order the Commission to issue you a license. You don't want another hearing.
We would be happy if you would do that, Your Honor.
I bet you would.
But what we're asking for, in all honesty, is a fair hearing in front of a fair tribunal. And if there are questions that we should have answered that have now been asked in the findings of fact and the conclusions of law, please send it back and give us a chance to answer them.
Okay. That's the thank you, Mr. Thompson.
Thank you.
Court will be in recess.